Welcome to the Personal Computer Show, the original personal computer radio show. I'm Hank Key, and my colleague in the studio with me is Joe King. We are broadcasting live. Yes, indeed, we're broadcasting live this evening in the studio of PRN.FM, and we're in a new location, but more about that later. And I'm happy to be here, Joe.
You are so cheerful and so upbeat. I'm looking around me. I see packing supplies, step ladders. Our chief engineer is sitting on a box. And you're so happy, Hank. You're so happy. I don't understand.
Well, I'm happy for a lot of reasons. Number one is we're doing a live show, and I always enjoy doing a live show. And because when I do a live show, I get to see you.
This is true. Remember when the World's Fair of 1964 came about, we were all sure that starting that Monday, we would all have video telephones in our homes. Well, it's not there yet. Not there yet.
Well, actually, I know that with my daughter and my grandchildren out on the West Coast, they prefer that it didn't exist at all because they don't want to be seen. They don't want to have me see what the place looks like and so on.
But we do have Skype. And incidentally, Just as an aside, Hank told us a couple of weeks ago, but you do have to update your Skype software quickly.
Yes. And actually, today was the day they be able to use Skype, you have to have the new version of Skype for both a Mac and the PC.
And so if you are using Skype and at a remote site, you have to update that to be sure. Something really, really bad happened this week. And, you know, we like to cover good news, but this was really bad news. I don't know if any of you noticed it, but when I tried to download an audio book, it was taking forever. I finally had to bust out of it. And then I heard that there was a massive, absolutely huge Amazon Web Services, people call that AWS, an Amazon Web Services outage. Hank, what do you know about that?
Well, what happened is that was explained was that they had a server that was handling error rates. And like anything, you try to estimate how much capacity you need, and there was probably an overflow there. And of course, because it was filled up, it wound up being a blockage for anything that uses Amazon in one form or another, as you know, for communications. Now it's reported that Amazon accounts for 37% of the total daily internet traffic. That's huge. And I know that you said to me, how did it account for 37%? Well, you know, people on Amazon, they're buying, but Netflix goes through it, Reddit goes through it, Grubhub goes through it. In fact, a lot of things go through it. I spoke to my son, and he said, you know, they're in a development area, and the whole company was out. I mean, it was pretty bad.
I know that here at PRN, they were affected to the degree that they couldn't upload their archives or access
the archive. I know that I had gotten a number of calls and email from people saying, hey, you were on the air last week on PRN.FM, and where's the podcast? And I hadn't realized that they, you know, they don't listen to us necessarily at 6 o'clock Eastern time. They depend on the podcast for whatever reason, because 6 o'clock is... people get out of work, but what 5 o'clock, and it's travel time and
drive time. Radio,
well, the thing is, if you live in the city, it's not drive time; it's subway time. And you know, I can understand that. But you know what? PRN got hit by it too.
Yes, they did. But more than that, PRN got hit by a perfect storm. Not only did the signal being carried through AWS go out, but we're in a physical move, and somebody somehow crashed their hard drive, so their current stuff was archives were lost, and they couldn't get out to the backup archives because of the AWS.
Yeah, but you know what it is? I mean, look, it's like a movement where everyone is doing it, whether you agree or disagree. It's called cloud storage. It's called putting everything on the cloud, the Internet of Things, and I don't feel comfortable with the Internet of Things.
Well, I don't feel too comfortable with that either. I've never trusted it.
Well, I asked Marty to do a segment on it, and let's hear it.
You hear the term the Internet of Things. What is it? Simply put, this is the concept of basically connecting any device with an on and off switch to the Internet and or to each other. Modern homes today are getting Internet-connected light bulbs, thermostats, TVs, and speakers. So with a simple voice command or the touch of a button on your smartphones, we can set the temperature, turn on the light, or prepare the TV to record a program. What could go wrong? If one of these devices get hijacked, hackers could potentially snoop around for sensitive data like financial or health information, or they could use a network of compromised devices to perform a widespread attack. As smart home devices become more popular, they will become bigger targets for hackers, so it's necessary to get ahead of the curve by securing your home. I've asked Marty Winston to address the security of Internet of Things.
Do you wear clothing because you look good in clothing? Do you wear clothing to be modest? Do you wear clothing so people can't see your imperfections? Hi, it's Marty Winston, the news tips guy, and as you know, the author, if you will, of the 40-year maintenance-free house. You'll read more about that at 40yearhouse.com. Hank showed me a New York Times article talking about vulnerability through the cloud for all of that connected Internet of Things stuff you have going under the umbrella of home automation. And boy, do I love it when people take viewpoints I agree with. Don't you? Isn't that just the most wonderful thing ever? And my viewpoint on the cloud is block it. Do away with it. Don't connect to it. It's going to hurt you. What is the cloud? Let's be honest about it. A cloud is a server at somebody else's address. That's everything it is. That's all it is. It's a server at somebody else's address, and you go through some kind of interface, a web interface, or any other kind of interface to get at what's on the server, and the server does some stuff and gets it back to you, and that's what the cloud is. Boom, it goes up. Bang, it comes down. It is the old model of remote computing, where the computer is somewhere else and all you have is a terminal to it. That's what the cloud has done. It's turned our so-called smart devices into terminals. Now, what's so wrong about that? The same thing with being naked. For whatever reason, if you don't want to do it, it's because you feel it creates some sort of vulnerability. And the vulnerability the cloud creates is that, whether or not you can see through it, there are a lot of hackers in Russia who can. Seeing through the cloud is as easy for them as it is to steal a billion of your pieces of personal information, credit card records from banks or stores. It's in the news all the time. It's almost old news. Oh, it's just another billion. We don't care anymore. We've seen it so much that we've become kind of hardened to it. Now, what happens if they crack into your home automation? Nothing they can do there, right? Well, no, not right. We've already had some home automation ransomware. I believe the story was that a hacker turned the heat up into the 90s and wouldn't let the homeowner change it until they paid a ransom. And I believe the homeowner did pay a ransom. Me, I would have torn it out and started again. It's just a thermostat. It cost less than the ransom. That kind of thing can happen, and it gets more complex as you keep adding features to what you're doing. Do you really need to talk to a cylinder that's going to send a string, not even that, a stream, a vocal stream, your audio to some kind of an analytic cloud-based speech recognition system that then determines what it thought you said and takes action based on that? Everybody who's talked to Cortana or Siri knows that speech recognition is far from perfected. It does okay. It's fun. But I wouldn't count on it to do neurosurgery. You know what I'm saying? It's just a little bit of a novelty. Look, I can say turn on the kitchen light and it turns on the kitchen. Well, get off your butt and go turn on the kitchen light if that's what's important to you. You don't have to pay $100 for a cylinder that'll make it happen through a $70 device because you've got a $150 hub somewhere. That's what the cloud has done. It's clouded your judgment. Now, there are other things that can happen, but let's start with some basic advice. If you have something that connects to the cloud, ask yourself if you can do without it. Oh, what's this guy? Some kind of, anti-progress kind of guy. No, that's not it. When you connect to the cloud, you connect every hacker out there. If all the cloud is doing is covering when you open and close your garage door, some of those hackers can go data mining and based on when they see your garage door opening or closing, determine where you, whether that's not where or whether it's when you are or are not at home. And when you are not at home, the chances are pretty good they've got some crooked cronies not far from your neighborhood who can come pay your house a visit and help themselves to whatever they want. Pawn shops, put out the welcome mat. You've got more stuff coming in. The idea of getting gear you can fence because somebody figures out your garage door may seem, well, how many of you have those new doorbells where there's video at the door and your voice through your phone? Bad guys know they figured out if there's a voice coming through the speaker at the door instead of from a person on the other side of the door, nobody's home. Help yourself. Break on in. It's not a big deal. He's going to do what? And there's another question. All of those wonderful smart app alarm situations that notify your friends and family when a bad guy's broken in? Which of your friends and family do you want to send to face a very likely armed bad guy? Personally, I would rather send the cops. First responders know how to deal with that. They're much better prepared both offensively and defensively, and they've had training. Your friends haven't. Your family hasn't. Get a real professional in there. It's not going to happen that often. By the way, it's one of the reasons I recommend dealing with a service, ADT is one, and there are others, to respond to stuff instead of leaving it to friends and family. If you've got an app that can call them, why not do an app that can call 911? If it's an emergency, make it a real emergency. And if you don't trust the app you're using or the gear you're using not to send a false alarm, why do you have it? Really, where's the common sense gone? It's not common anymore. The cloud has clouded your judgment. The cloud has made you vulnerable. The cloud has failed to mask your nakedness in the electronic world. My advice on all of that stuff, if you can control it inside your walls, do that. Don't let it connect to the cloud. Do you have a router? Does a router let you set up a second network? Is there another Ethernet connection for that second network? Then set up a second network that doesn't connect to the outside world. The only port you want to let connect is NTP, the network time signal, so you've got a time reference that's consistent with everything else. Then if you can control it from indoors, from your intranet, if you can make that happen, then you can enjoy all of that automation handled entirely in-house without ever going to the cloud. And this is a message to the people who are making those darn products. Stop making people go to your servers. Keep them off the cloud. It's imperiling the people who have been gracious enough to provide their money to help you earn your living. They've been good to you and you've been rotten to them. You've exposed them to stuff because it's expedient to your profits, to your revenues, to your responsibility to shareholders and your wife too. Yes, that's what you've done. You've just been unconscionably selfish about it. You haven't thought yourself that way, have you? You're a good guy. You're not a bad guy. You're a good guy. No, you're not. You haven't thought through it. The cloud has clouded your judgment. Are we perceiving a theme here? Your best bet is to disconnect from the cloud. Your best bet is to have intranet, no WAN access networks indoors for everything except the things where you need access. You have a computer, it's got anti-malware running, it's going through a router, so you've got network address translation on that network. You want to browse, you want to do your email. That's what it's all about. but to let your thermostat or your light switch do that, or what else? Your talk to me cylinder or any of the other silly home automation things out there. They're doing it so you can show it off. They're taking advantage of you. Really, do you have to show off that you can say, turn on my disposal? Why would you ever need to do that anywhere other than at the disposal? I don't know that there is a disposal for that, but really, you don't need this stuff. Wouldn't you rather have the money? Wouldn't you rather go have dinner or see a movie or save it for somebody's tuition? Doesn't that make more sense? Don't let the cloud cloud your judgment. And listen, you may think, an alarmist. Oh, what's with the Russian hackers? Do your homework. It's documented. It's way documented, long-term documented, and it isn't just about the results of elections. It isn't just about influencing campaigns. It's about making a lot of money by taking from us. How about losing your credit card information? How about losing your identity to an identity thief? Do you have a nanny cam? Do you have a home security camera? Those are high resolution. Is anywhere within their viewpoint, perchance, a document that might share some of that information? Do you get credit card statements in the mail? Do you get insurance account statements in the mail? Do you get bank statements in the mail? If that paper's out there, that camera can pick it up, which means those hackers in Russia can pick it up, which means you could say bye-bye to that balance. Goodbye. Cloud took your judgment away, and then the cloud took your money away, and the cloud took your control away, and pretty soon the cloud will take your brain away if you let it. This is my weather report for you. Avoid the cloud. It doesn't help you. It can hurt you. And if you have to connect to the cloud, think twice, three times. Get good advice, get bad advice, and talk yourself out of it. My personal advice, if it connects to the cloud, wait a month before you get it. Read what's happened. Let that sudden fad urge to buy now, own, and show off go away and make a considered decision. You won't buy 10% of what you're buying now. And look at that money. What can you buy with that? Yeah, anything you want. News Tips guy Marty Winston, back to you.
Thank you, Marty. Before buying a product, consumers should do a web search on it to see if the company regularly issues software updates that fix security vulnerabilities. The other thing you can do is beef up your wimpy passwords and regularly audit appliances for updates. If updates are available, install them immediately. So, Joe, what say you?
First of all, I am very, very surprised. You know, Marty Winston is not only the founder and publisher of a thing called News Tips, but in 1908, he very famously told Henry Ford he was wasting his time, that the buggy and the horse with the whip was fine. You don't trust those newfangled cars. You know, they might have a car accident. So he's still driving his horse and buggy out in Ohio. The point here is I had ADT on my house. They asked me, did I want to make it internet available? And I said no, not because of any of the things Marty said, but I knew I was selling the house very soon, and I didn't want it. What happened one day was my cat set off the alarm. Now, did ADT do what I thought they should do and call the police department to come out and check my house? No, they called me, but I wasn't near a phone. So then they called the second phone on the list, which was my wife, and she was with me. And then they called my neighbor, who said that when he got back from the store, he would check. Please, by then the criminals would have cleaned me out. But when I called ADT to complain, they said, well, we're not a security service. We're simply a reporting service, and we reported it. Now, if you want, we will, of course, call the police first. But then if you have more than one false alarm, they'll charge you a lot of money.
Well, you know, Joe, I think what we were saying is that the term they now use is cloud computing, the Internet of Things. It sounds great where, hey, we're going to connect everything and everything's going to be smart. But I think we're all in agreement when I say all. I think it's you, Marty, myself, saying that the biggest problem we find is there is no security with this stuff.
That's exactly what Marty and I are really talking about. But Marty is saying because there's no security, avoid it. And I'm saying because there's no security, improve it. And I think people could improve it. Right now, Hank, if I was a good enough hacker, I could turn off your security lights, open your front door, and walk in and murder you and your wife. I don't think that would be so much fun for either of us, so I don't do it. But there's a way around it. There could be security on your security light. There could be security on your front door lock. And we could still have the convenience of not having to go down to the basement every time to reset the thermostat. And you would be able to do protective things on your house when you're out on vacation. Don't avoid the new technology. Improve it.
Well, have you ever been a prankster?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, I shouldn't talk about a prankster thing that some people may actually do, right?
Well, if you want to hold the responsibility for telling
people... Well, it's like... For instance, the latest thing now is that people are buying printers, which are Wi-Fi printers. And why do they buy Wi-Fi printers? For a whole lot of reasons, like you buy a Chromebook, how do you print? Well, what you do is you send a message to the printer via Wi-Fi, and it's treated like email, and you get it printed. And I've gotten some complaints from people saying, hey, I'm getting garbage printing on my printer. And what's happened is that, number one is they never set a password on, or if they did, there is a default password they never change. This reminds me of the old days when we had fax machines. If I knew the fax number, I would use up the person's paper and just send garbage out.
Well, you know, there's a little bit of a change as we get older and more mature. It used to be if I checked all of the available Wi-Fi sites in my building, I would say that 8 out of 10 had the default password set. Now when I do it, I find it's only about 5 out of 10.
But you can send them garbage information. They'll never know where it came from because it's on a printer.
But most of them do have a lock on them. They have some sort of security. I find that in my building, and I can only go by that, when I check on all the open internet WANs, that maybe pushing it, 2 or 3 don't have some sort of heavy security. Can that security be broken? Absolutely, but not by me.
Well, in life, nothing is perfect. What you try to do is you do things where you minimize risk. What you do is you set up things where if you have some control over it, be cognizant of it, do something about it instead of saying, by magic, it's going to work. There's no magic in it.
No, and whenever you're going to buy something that is on the Internet of Things, and you don't say to somebody, is that on the Internet of Things? You say, is that controllable on the Internet or on a network? The first question you should be, what kind of security is built in? Can I change the password easily? Can I put another level of security beyond the simple password? And you're talking about your home. This should not be
a
question.
Well, you know, Joe, I think there's one thing that most people, they're starting to become aware of it now. You know, people were getting the internet, they got routers so that more than one machine can use it. I wonder how many people realize that there are updates to routers and how many people actually updated their routers.
How many people bothered changing the password on their routers?
Yeah.
The password on my router for until I got to it, until I turned it on, was admin. And come on. Hank, didn't you once provide me with a list of master passwords for every router made?
Yes, it did. By the way, you know, we're talking about communications. One of the things that's been happening for the past month is that the four main carriers, wireless carriers, is Verizon, T-Mobile, AT&T, and Sprint. They've been having a price war, which is good for we, the consumer. And T-Mobile has stolen a lot of business from AT&T, and they're starting to steal it from Verizon. And What they did was they just offered a lower price.
Not really. What they did, yes, there was a lower price, but that's not what brought them the customers. They suddenly did something that your butcher started doing 50 or 100 years ago, your greengrocer does. They started honoring the price that they quoted. If they told you lamb chops were $1 a pound, they didn't say plus 50 cents for the wrapping and 75 cents for the bagging.
Wait. You know, you're hitting home now because we have a mayor that says, oh, you got to charge 5 cents for the bag.
And 5 cents. No, what T-Mobile did is they said, it's $50. If there are any fees, any licensing, any
taxes,
it's all part of that $50. That way you know that if you have to budget it, and a lot of people I know nowadays budget very tightly, they can allow $50. Now, Verizon offers the exact same package. It's also $50. But it's plus fees and taxes and 911 fees. And
you should not be surprised if the extra charges is in excess of 30% above what was originally quoted.
It is. And because I'm a Verizon customer, I can say you're absolutely right, Hank.
And I'm a T-Mobile customer, and I'm smiling all the way to the bank.
But you know, I can beat you out on your T-Mobile price.
Well, now, that's the thing.
T-Mobile.
Now, wait a minute. Verizon now has said, okay, they will also have an unlimited plan. By the way, that's a misnomer to say unlimited plan because all four of them, it's not unlimited. What they say mean unlimited is that it's unlimited, but when you hit a certain limit, you're throttled. What do we mean by throttling?
Throttled means they're putting a speed limit on you. They're putting the brakes on. And when Verizon used to do that, they used to, at one level, one quantity, they would put one level on you, and then they would lower it down until finally they were at a dial-up modem speed. That's be that as it may, I looked in the window of this morning because I knew we were coming over here to talk about this tonight, and I looked at T-Mobile to see what they were really offering me, Hank, and I found that I could cut almost 20% off what their charges were if I paid them in advance each month.
Well, one of the things I wanted to do was to talk about this price war, and I figure, you know, that's about 3-4 weeks ago when this all started. I could then talk about it. However, you really can't talk about it because the rates keep changing. They keep leapfrogging each other. So there are things that you can talk about. For instance, with the four services, obviously, the most important thing is the coverage. In other words, if you can't get coverage in your area, it doesn't matter how good the price is, how well the customer satisfaction is. If you have no coverage, forget it, okay? But assuming you do have coverage, what's the next thing you look at is what you have to do is you'll find out that you want to know what the throttling is, because the word unlimited is not unlimited. And it ranges from AT&T is 22 gigabytes, Verizon is 22, Sprint is 23, and T-Mobile is 28.
Let's put that into perspective for a second, Hank. How a movie runs maybe 2 hours, and if it's a high-definition movie, how many gigabytes does that take?
Well, it's very easy. What I do is, remember the day of the VHS? Mm-hmm. And then they became DVDs. Well, the standard DVD was, guess what, 4 gigs. So the typical 90-minute movie or 2-hour movie was somewhere around 3 gigs. So that's how you figure out how much storage it is.
Was that in high definition?
High definition would be twice that. Easily twice that.
So you're saying a high-definition movie might be 8 gigs?
You know what? I find that these movies are no longer big, long movies. They seem to be shorter and shorter. You know, one of the complaints I had was I watch these movies nowadays, and then you say, wait a minute, where's the ending? And you would say to me, that was the ending.
Yeah, that does happen. But my point is that...
So what are you talking about, 6 gigs?
And so talk about 6 gigs, and how much will Verizon or AT&T allow you on your unlimited?
Well, the most is T-Mobile at 28 gigs. So
28 gigs. So
you're talking about 4 or 5 movies.
4 or 5 movies a month.
A month.
That's not a lot.
Well, Some people are hooked on watching movies.
No, I'm just saying 4 or 5 movies a month is basically a movie a week or a movie in a quarter a week. That means Saturday night you can watch a movie. But if you want to watch a movie on the weeknight, be careful because you're going to use up all your bits.
Well, you know, you got then, but that's only part of it, Joe, because like if you're a Netflix person, they had an arrangement where, depending on who the supplier is, you get the movie at doesn't go against the plan, or if you go over, it's a lower rate.
Well, here's the thing, Hank. If I use Netflix or YouTube on my cell phone or on my tablet, it goes against my data. But if I do it on my TiVo, which is a television, it doesn't. It's included. There's something not fair about this. I'm not sure what it is, but something is not fair.
Well, one of the things that I looked at was, well, how about the cost for a single line, 2 lines, 3 lines? In other words, if you're a bachelor and you just say, hey, I'm just getting a phone for myself, what's the cost? Because you'll find that it's not linear. One supplier will be the cheapest for single line, and a different supplier will be cheaper for 2 lines, and another one cheaper for 3 lines, and so on. It's really a mix. And so I was going to talk about that, and my son called me up. He says, hey, wait a minute. T-Mobile just made a change last night, literally last night. And I said, what is it? He says, well, it's 2 lines for $100. I says, well, that's $50 a line. That's like competitive with, Sprint and so on. He says, yeah, but you know what the third line is? 0.
So they're giving you 3 lines with a 2-line contract.
Yeah, what they did was that the third line was originally, before all this happened, was $41. And they basically says, okay, we'll cut it $41 if you have 3. But that's only part of the measurement, because one of the other things is how many people can you put on a plan? I think I surprised you, Joe, with some of the answers.
Yeah, they're all different. And what bothers me is nothing is standard and nothing is the same. Now, I got an email, I think it was, and it was later confirmed on a television ad, that Verizon is going to offer me a brand new unlimited all-you-can-eat plan. All the text, all the tweets, all the whatever it is, voice. But again, there was extra fees. Mm-hmm. So I called them up and I said, how can I figure this out? And they said, well, I'll tell you what, if you call back during normal business hours, 9 to 5, and ask for a customer service rep, we will go over your last 3 bills with you and show you what they were and what they would be under this new plan, and then you would make your choice.
Well, so I think that more changes will be coming, and if you are if you want to switch carriers or you want to see what savings you can, you're going to have to be alert. You have to say, what do I need? In other words, how many people I'm going to have on the plan? What's the coverage I need? And you have to write down all the fine details.
Well, let me ask you a question, Hank, because you're very familiar with this now. Am I allowed to have a hotspot?
It turns out that, with the exception of AT&T's choice, everyone allows you to have a hotspot. But then you have to be careful. You have to ask them, how do you define a hotspot?
I have a smartphone, Hank. If I have a hotspot, can I still get phone calls in at the same time?
It depends.
And that's my problem with everything in this whole business. It depends.
Well, no, not really. When you say, if it's essential, I have a hotspot, go get a separate unit. That's what I said.
Which
to
I
you.
Did do.
Yeah.
But can you remember back to when Ma Bell was one organization and you got a phone? Your choice was, do you want black or black?
And it was $9.35 per month.
And if you your long distance was on top of that, but nothing
yes,
else.
Correct.
Your regional calls were included. Mm-hmm. Regional meaning New York, the suburbs, and the upstate. And then one day they discovered, hey, they don't have to change your bill. They just have to say you're only allowed 22 calls and you'll have to pay a dime for each extra one.
Yeah.
And then they discovered another way of making money. Do you buy coffee by the can, Hank?
Yeah, I do.
Do you think you're buying a pound at a time?
No, they don't sell it by 16 ounces anymore. Now, that 11.73 ounces, right, and all that.
At first, the pound was 15 ounces, then 14, and now people in business are being honest, but they're not being honest.
There's one other thing I want to cover with you, Joe, and the fact that is that April 1st is the lottery for H-1B.
April Fool's Day?
Yeah, it's you know who gets fooled on this? People who work, the workers. H-1B visa is an employment-based non-immigrant category for temporary workers for a visa, and the employer must offer a job and apply for your H-1B visa petition with the immigration department. And right now, the cap is at $85,000, with $20,000 set aside for advanced degrees, so it's $105,000. And I think it's important because in Congress, there are three proposals very similar because of the huge complaints about it. And, you know, what's been happening is that people were being replaced by H-1B workers, and the claim is because, they're more skillful. But then to find out that to get your severance pay, you have to be willing to train the people replacing you. And I have a list of the people. I was shocked. I thought it was only two, three companies that, you know, big companies. It turns out it's a lot more than that. And, you know, in the New York area, I was surprised New York Life is one of them. But the IEEE, it's a mixed bag. They have 200 engineering people on there. And the Democrats and the Republicans in the House and in the Senate, they all seem to have a similar proposal that they're coalescing around. One is that they want to increase the number of H-1B visas from the current 105,000 to somewhere close to 130,000 to 180,000. I don't know why they want to do that, because it's supposed to be for some skilled labor that we need. The other thing is that what they are talking about is to cut down on some of the abuses, is that require that the minimum for a job should, instead of being 60,000 for the technical work, is to either be 100,000 or 130,000.
Can I put in my 2 cents worth? Because I don't think anybody in the audience, and very few people in this room, understand the whole subject of H-1B. Very, very few workers who are working under the law of H-1B are making anything a year. They're making it per hour. They're hourly workers. They're either consultants on the hour or other hourly workers. So for them to say you have to make $100,000 or $120,000 a year means that they don't understand the business and they should not be in Congress making laws. Yes, there is a way to make such a law, but it's not the way Congress does it. The second thing is they point out that you have to, in many cases, the worker has to train his replacement.
Well, the law originally is you should make an effort to find out that you don't have to qualify, that you don't have an American worker available to do it.
Well, and a lot of businesses realize that they could advertise in the daily racing form for a technical worker and they would meet the requirements. Again, a stupid congressman writing a stupid law. Every time I have a problem with anything, it relates to a specific congressman. The other thing I'd like to say is they put out the word that this is so unfair because the worker being replaced has to train his replacement, and yet the worker being trained is supposed to be the super expert. But that's a misstatement and a misleading thing. To train, yes, in the sense that the terminology might be a little bit different, but he knows the technology. He knows the, and that's why he's being hired. What he has to do is train on who's the best client that we're working with, who's the most important. If John Doe calls up, do you drop everything and call? It gets me so aggravated that once again we're getting, what's it called, Hank, fake news?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, I'm so disgusted. Let me just wrap it up by saying this, all right, is that April 1st, if nothing is done, it's going to be what exactly it is today. 105,000 jobs will go into the lottery, and nothing else changed. And the base salary is 60,000 minimum. And if you are if you have anything to say, you got to contact your senator, your House of Representatives person, because they must come up with legislation by the end of March. So if you want to put your 2 cents in, whether it's effective or not, you could do it right now, and I hope you can do it.
But please keep in mind they will not pay any attention to you.
Hey, Joe, you know what? We have two special segments that I would like to get to, and that's Alfred Paul with Wearable Tech. And we do have a tip of the day or for the week, so we like to get to it. And
Incidentally, I'd like to know how you're all enjoying Joe Rejeski's tip of the week, and drop me a note at pcradio@gmail.com.
Let's get to it.
Hello, this is Alfred Poor with news about wearable technology from Health Tech Insider. This week, I'm going to get my geek on and talk about three technology stories, all of which have some pretty interesting implications for wearable devices. The first one starts with a history lesson. About 70 years ago, Shockley, Bardeen, and Brattain, three guys discovered something at Bell Labs. They called it a transistor. Basically, what it is a solid-state switch that uses electricity to control the flow of electricity in a circuit. So that flow of electricity can be turned on and off by sending a signal using another electrical contact. Pretty big stuff because it's made all kinds of entertainment and computer technology possible. We now cram thousands and thousands of these little switches onto tiny devices and use them for our televisions and our smartphones and all kinds of devices that we now take for granted. The folks at Linköping University in Sweden have developed a new wrinkle on this very important technology. They've created a transistor where the current in an electrical circuit is controlled not by electricity, but by heat. The change in heat actually causes the circuit to switch on and off. Basically, it's a very clever design. They have two kinds of ions, very lightweight ones and some heavier ones. When exposed to a heat differential, the ions move to opposite sides, which creates a voltage differential, which can then be used to switch a circuit on and off. The technology turns out to be 100 times more sensitive than the traditional thermoelectric devices that are currently used. What does this mean for the future? Well, for example, this device could be used in smart bandages. Have a lot of them spread over an area, and it would be very sensitive to any changes in temperature that could be caused by inflammation and possible infection. It also could be used for night vision, even possibly use body heat as a way to control wearable technologies on the body. So it's a pretty interesting development, certainly a step forward from the transistor that was first invented 70 years ago. Now, I have a question for you. For wearable technology, it's fine when we have it on the outside of our bodies and we can recharge them or change the batteries or whatever. But what happens when the device is inside your body? We're already using a variety of ingestibles. In other words, digital devices that we can swallow in order to accomplish one task or another. How do you get power to these devices? Well, let me ask you a question. In school, maybe you did an experiment where you caused a light to light up using a lemon. By using different metal electrodes, you could create a current using the acid in the lemon to create enough power to light a light bulb. As it turns out, our stomachs are filled with very, very strong acid. And researchers at the Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston, along with scientists from MIT, have actually found a way to harness stomach power to use for electricity to power smart devices in the body. They've even found that the small intestines have sufficient acid to create enough power to be useful. They created a prototype device that was swallowed, and it was able to broadcast the body temperature of the subject every 12 seconds for 6 days. That's quite a lot of power. No external battery, no external power source, so it's a pretty impressive technology. This could be used to power ingestible cameras that could inspect the insides of our digestive tract, or it could power smart pills that could be used to trigger the release of special medications in very specific locations in the body. Being able to provide power to ingestibles without the use of potentially toxic battery technology or other kinds of devices could be a real boon and could open up a whole new range of devices that we can use in the future. Now, one of the interesting things about digital electronics is they're so fast, they actually spend most of their time doing nothing but sitting around waiting for a signal to do something. I mean, even when We have devices streaming audio or even video. A lot of the components are sitting around waiting to be told when it's time for them to do something else. All this time that they're sitting around, they're consuming power. And this is a problem. A large part of the energy budget for many devices is spent on keeping them awake and ready to do something when they're needed. Well, a bunch of researchers at the University of Bristol in the United Kingdom have come up with a very clever device. It's a switch that uses no power when it's on standby. It doesn't need to be connected to a battery or any power source when it's on standby, which is pretty impressive. When it gets a signal and turns itself on, it can then trigger a wake-up circuit for another device, the main device, so that it can start working. So that means that the main device can shut down completely, and this one little switch can do all the listening and wake everybody up when there's something to do. So how does it get its power? Well, it turns out that its power requirements are so small that it can be triggered by the output of a sensor. For example, a photodiode, the light sensor that's used in your television to receive the information from your remote control. That photodiode puts out enough electricity when it receives a light signal that it's able to turn on this switch and have it power up the rest of the system. So this is a very important development. It can be triggered not just by light sensors, but it also can be triggered by other sensors such as accelerometers, which are motion detection devices, or it can be triggered by a radio frequency signal. And the power coming into the antenna will be sufficient to trigger the switch and have it turn on. So as a result, devices are going to need less battery power because when they go to sleep, they'll be really asleep and not just on standby, which means they can have smaller batteries, makes the devices lighter, makes them last longer. And so as a result, we can expect eventually to see wearables that are smaller, lighter, and much more useful. For more information, go to healthtechinsider.com. This is Alfred Poor. Thanks for listening.
Thank you, Alfred. The Westchester PC Users Group will meet on Thursday, March the 2nd at 7 p.m. Presentation is Memory Development, and it will be held at the Keller Williams Realty, 120 Bloomingdale Road, first floor, located at White Plains, New York. The Amateur Computer Group of New Jersey will have a presentation on Polyglot Build 2s, Friday, March the 3rd, 8 p.m., and it will be held at the Scotch Plains Rescue Squad, 1916 Bartle Avenue in Scotch Plains, New Jersey. The Computer Learning Center at Ewing will have a presentation on photobooks, the compact way of storing memories, Tuesday, March the 7th, at the Community Room at the Computer Learning Center, located at 999 Lower Ferry Road, and their phone number is 609-883-1776. The New York Amateur Computer Club will be having their meeting on Thursday, March the 9th, 7 p.m. at NYU, 32 Waverly Place, Silver Building in New York, and photo IDs required. And finally, TCF 2017, formerly known as the Trenton Computer Festival, will be held on Saturday, March the 18th, from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., and the theme of the festival will be autonomous vehicles. There'll be talks, workshops, vendors, and there'll be a banquet afterwards at the College of New Jersey. For more information, tcf-nj.org. And I hope to be there, and I hope to see you.
For this week's Simple Computer Tips for Busy People, we're going to use your mind to automatically start your favorite applications. Well, not really. But we're going to make it look like you're using your mind. Hey, it's time for Simple Computer Tips for Busy People. Busy people like you. I'm Joe Brzezinski, author of the soon-to-be-released Simple Computer Tips for Busy People. Here's a simple, cool computer tip you need to know. Whenever you log into your computer, you always start the same applications, right? Your email, your web browser, and probably a few others. Why not have all those applications automatically start while you're getting your cup of coffee? When you return to your desk, Outlook, Google Chrome, Microsoft Word, iTunes, they're ready for you, ready for you to jump into the day and conquer the world. It's easy to do. Essentially, all you need to do is copy shortcuts for your favorite applications to the Windows Startup folder. That's it. That's all it takes. For this tip, the easiest approach is to copy shortcuts for your favorite applications from your desktop. Now, if you don't have an application on your desktop that you would like to automatically start, just click the Windows Start button and find the application, then drag the icon for the application to your desktop. A shortcut should be created. Okay, now, in just three easy steps, we're going to copy shortcuts from your desktop to the Windows Startup folder so your computer automatically starts those applications. If you don't know, the Windows key is the key in the lower left area of your keyboard with the Windows logo on it. You're going to press the Windows key and the letter R. R for Romeo. A window should appear with a box to start typing some text. We're going to type this command, very simple to do. Shell, like seashell, S-H-E-L-L, colon, startup. All one word, no spaces. And then click the OK button. Now just copy any icon for an application to the startup window that you'd like to automatically start whenever you log into Windows. You are done. That's it. Now, whenever you log into Windows, any application you copy to your startup folder, it's going to automatically start. You can even automatically start files if you copy shortcuts for the files to your startup folder. Maybe you have a preferred Word document or Excel spreadsheet or something that you reference every day. Just create a shortcut for that file and then copy it to the startup window. Some applications that you may want to start automatically are maybe your Microsoft Office applications like Outlook, Word, Excel. Email applications, Outlook again, Thunderbird, whatever. Web browsers, Google Chrome, Internet Explorer, Mozilla Firefox. Adobe applications. You got Adobe Acrobat, Photoshop, Illustrator, Adobe Premiere. If you work with QuickBooks, you're in accounting or bookkeeping, start QuickBooks automatically, or Skype, iTunes even, or maybe even have an instant messaging program. I don't know. It's your computer. Make it do what you need it to do. And that's it for your next trick, turning 8 hours of work into 4 hours. Try this tip now and you'll never forget it. And that's this week's Simple Computer Tips for Busy People. If you'd like more ways to help you finish work early, check out more great tips for non-techies in my new book. Just visit www.simplecomputertipsforbusypeople.com. I'm Joe Brzezinski, over and out.
Thank you, Joe. The website for the Personal Computer Show is www.pcradioshow.org, and we communicate via Twitter at PCRadio212. We can be heard each Wednesday at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time on PRN.FM on the Internet and at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on WBAI-FM 99.5 New York on the radio or WBAI.org streaming on the Internet. In the meantime, stay in touch and keep on computing and back up, back up, and back up. I'm Hank Key, and on behalf of Joe King and Michael Horowitz, we thank you for listening. Stay safe and stay warm until we meet again, same time, same station next week.